the Five Rings Podcast, Road to Tokyo on the Sport Podcasting Network. Your weekly fix leading up to the 2020 Olympic Games with Dwayne Rollins and Kevin Larame. Follow us and listen to us live on Twitter at Five Rings Podcast and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network for more content.
Good day, good night, and welcome to the Five Rings Podcast. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Rollins, as always. And Dwayne, it's the Rugby World Cup. I've been watching a lot of rugby. I was going to say waking up early. No, I just go to bed at the same time as always, so very late, so I get to watch the first game of the day.
Yeah, you're playing the FIFA 20 World Cup in your own mind and then watching the actual Rugby World Cup with real athletes and
pretty
all
much.
That next?
That was my evening for the last two nights, playing FIFA 20 on my small TV and watching the Rugby World Cup on the big TV. And we'll just quickly glance on a few results that are interesting. But, you know, the Rugby World Cup for me, it's trying to finally understand a ruck, a knock-on, and other terms like these ones.
It's always fun to discover a new sport. I mean, I've discovered that with the other code of rugby league, which I knew a little bit about before the Toronto Wolfpack came to Toronto, which is a English rugby league team currently in the championship, the second tier of rugby of the English Premier League, playing a game in a week's time for the opportunity to get promoted, to become the first team in North American history to get promoted to the top tier of a league, which I think is pretty exciting. So I've learned rugby league and the nuances of it over the past few years, and it's always nice to look at a sport when you're someone like ourselves that watch a lot of sports, to look at a sport with fresh eyes again. And it feels that the rugby union in this case is doing a little bit of that for you. I haven't watched as much. I've been watching the highlights. I well tune in to watch the Canada game, which I believe is tonight or tomorrow morning. Yes. So that should be fun. And I always cheer Canada on, even though they're quite badly overmatched in this, I think. But yeah. We'll see.
Well, just today, there was a... today, we're recording on Wednesday, especially this week. I know your graphics are live every Tuesday. We try, but today it's Wednesday and it is what it is. But Fiji-Uruguay today was a big upset, Dwayne, because Uruguay is not a powerhouse in the world of rugby. It's a new upcoming team with a mix of veterans. And, well, Uruguay upsetted Fiji by 3 points, 30-27. Uruguay was talking about, we had courage, we worked 4 years, because they qualified 4 years ago for this World Cup. So they knew they were going to be in the World Cup. And for once, they worked really hard. They were talking about just to win a game, because they had never won a game before at the World Cup level. Remind you of anyone? Remind you of another country? Hello? McFly or Canada, maybe, versus Italy. It's the time, but it's that type of story that really excites me. Player, literally the player from Uruguay that was interviewed, he was bleeding, bloody, sweaty, tired, still out of breath, but the joy on his face. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's, I think, the beauty of having the qualification process allow for teams and federations to be qualified quite a bit ahead of time. I think they're recognizing by doing that a lot of these smaller federations, if they're going to have any chance in you know what to compete, have to really have time to come together and get funding and find sponsorship and all those good things. And if you know, it's hard to find sponsorship when you're an emerging sport, when you're a new sport in a country, when you don't have the carrot of a World Cup at the end of the journey for the sponsor, right? And if you allow these teams, as the World Cup does, as the Rugby Union Federation does, to be qualified so far in advance, you're giving them an opportunity to find that sponsorship. It's not possible in every sport, but it is, I think, possible in something that other sports that are trying to reach different parts of the world to spread their goodwill should really consider and try and to branch out and grow their sport. I mean, look, we could have a conversation one day, maybe we should, about cricket and how it has increasingly become less exclusive, that the Indian Federation in cricket is dominates the world and is preventing the growth of the sport beyond the traditional powers. And there's a great Netflix, I forget the name of it, there's a Netflix documentary on this, which talks about it. It's fascinating to watch, and I'll try and remember that for next show and let people know. But
I had to watch that. I was looking for something to watch on Netflix. I've been spending hours lately just browsing through Netflix, Oh, can you imagine?
I'll find it for you for next week for sure. It was about, it's a bit quick. It's like a half hour little blurb that just dives into why the Indian Cricket Federation, they're making tons of money on 2020 and all the leagues, but it's all going back to them. So basically it's just creating this gap.
It's true,
like the Champions League in soccer, how the teams that qualify every year, particularly in the smaller leagues, just grow this gap through the money that they get from it. It's a similar phenomena.
It's funny that we're not moving to cricket, but you're mentioning 2020 and leagues around the world. I was surprised to learn that, you know, the league in Canada, there's a GT20 league in Canada, which is a surprising because it's the same damn players that I was watching during the Cricket World Cup this summer. And I realized
it's in the GTA. It's in the Greater Toronto area.
Like, yeah, well, there's a team from Montreal. There's a damn team from Montreal, the Montreal Tigers. So I was watching a bit of GT20 and then I realized, geez, I know the players. They're the players from the Cricket World Cup. They're the players from the best teams in the world in the IPL. Oh, then I realized, oh, so it's the IPL making the money and literally just touring around, having short season around the world with the same players to discover the sport, to make money, but still going back to India. That actually makes a lot of sense once you talk about it.
Precisely. It's amazing how in the Five Rings, how one comment can lead us down another road, which is completely part and parcel of what this podcast talks about. So there you go. Maybe we'll have a whole cricket show. That's commit to that. We'll have a whole cricket show and bring on an expert in the near future, but we should probably move on now.
Yeah, no. So the Cricket World Cup again, Canada will play Italy at 3:45 a.m. between Wednesday and Thursday, so tonight or tomorrow morning, depending. And there's also the England-USA game right after, so it's a good doubleheader for Canadian and North American television. And Samoa had a big result yesterday against Russia, 34-9. England-Tonga, England great result. Wales-Georgia, Wales, it's looking like a world beater. So this is so far what I've discovered, Dwayne, in the Rugby World Cup, watching a few games. Ireland-Scotland was fun to watch for the history and the history of the two countries and the geographical history, political history. But on the pitch, Ireland dominated Scotland. It wasn't even funny. And Ireland's not even a top, like, it's a great team, but I wouldn't consider them the top favorite. There's a couple of teams that are top favorites, but Wales is looking like one of them. So that's one thing I learned so far watching the Rugby World Cup.
Fair enough. Well, the home nations do tend to do very well, but Scotland is the exception in that, as you say. You know, different things thrill different people. So that's what makes the sports world beautiful, what makes multi-sport exciting, and that's what the Five Rings is all about.
It's what it's all about. And another thing that the Five Rings is all about, Dwayne, is talk about the real issues in the world of sports. The IOC has, here, let me just get the article in front of me. There was a new IOC guideline regarding transgender athletes that was supposed to be proposed, and it's been delayed. So here's the release, press release, and this is an article written on The Guardian by Sean Ingle. Plans by the International Olympic Committee to introduce stricter guidelines for transgender athletes before the Tokyo 2020 Games have run into the sand because its panel of scientists is struggling to reach agreement on such a thorny issue. The scientists had been expected to recommend having the permitted testosterone levels for trans women competing in elite sport. However, several sources have confirmed to The Guardian that the IOC's draft guidelines have been parked, for now, because the whole subject is so politically charged and sensitive. Under the current IOC guidelines issued in November 2015, athletes who transition from male to female can compete in the women's category without requiring surgery to remove their testes, provided their total testosterone level in serum is kept below 10 nanomoles per liter for at least 12 months. So, that being said, for 2020, for Tokyo, there will not be a change from the last Olympics.
This is a very complicated issue. And I think that that's the place to start with this conversation. That anyone on either side of this issue that wants to say that this is black and white is not speaking from a place of truth. It is incredibly complicated. It is incredibly complicated to be fair on a sporting perspective and respectful on a human perspective. That is an incredibly complex thing to do. And there are people out there that will just say, well, it isn't complicated. You should just let anyone who identifies as a female compete as a female. But then those people tend not to be sporting people. They tend not to be people that have been involved with elite sport, that'll love elite sport, because they're not fully understanding that that really tips the balance incredibly in the favor of someone who was born male to compete against female. It's obviously not as much of an issue the other way around. And for anyone who argues that that's not the truth, I mean, I point to 150 years of track and field records as your evidence. We have clear world records on any sport that's measurable that shows that those born male are faster and stronger and, compete at a level which would allow them to, like, the 100th place finisher, people that don't even qualify for the Olympics on the male side would win the 100-meter gold medal on the in the female side, right? The world record on the female side is 10.49, and 10.49 or 10.48, 10 mid tens anyway, and that would not even qualify you for the male Olympics, right? That's just truth. That's just absolutely provable. So if you want to have equal access to half the world's population to the highest level of sport, which we consider to be the Olympic gold medal, then you have to find some classification which allows there to be a fair competition. But we live in 2019 where we understand that there is a difference between sex and gender, and that there are people that identify with the opposite gender that they have been born with, that also we want to be inclusive with them in sport. But I don't know the answer. I don't know if testosterone levels are the answer, T levels are the answer. I've to talk to people off record before. I aim to get someone on this show to talk about this very complex issue in the future. I'm open-minded about what the answer is. I do not want to exclude transgendered athletes, but I also recognize that there is an inherent advantage, and we've seen it with athletes that have transitioned, that have dominated sports. And I don't know. I just don't know if it's fair. I don't, and that's a problem to me.
No, it is. The levels itself and the threshold, the limit, now it's 10 nanomoles. Nanomoles, it's a very, very small amount. Like, you understand, it's a microscopical unit to measure parts per million when it comes to bloodstream and liquids. So when we talk about 10 nanomoles per liter of blood, it's an extremely small amount, but it's still more than women produces naturally in most cases, which is point zero, from 0.015 to 5 nanomole usually at the extreme cases. So having a threshold at 10 already now, still unfair depending of the sport. And that's where the IOC is asking the individual federations of sports to decide themselves, their thresholds, their guideline, what is fair for their sport, and what differentiate fair from not fair in different sport could be different regarding of the nature of the sport too. And I think that's a way to look at it, that it's fair for everyone. And I'm going to use an extreme case to highlight one part of a nuance there, and that's combat sports. Of course, the Olympics, you have boxing, you have taekwondo, and you're going to get karate in Tokyo, full contact karate, which you're allowed to punch in the face. You don't have nothing protecting your fingers, like just a little wrap. So when you're looking at full contact sports, combat sports, we understand that even if the testosterone level is into the threshold of under 5 nanomoles, the years of living with more than that before post-transition, if there was that, is still equivalent to a bigger muscular mass, which in a combat sport, it's not hard to grasp the advantage that it would give to one opponent versus the other. Concussion would be the result for the other, probably. But a physical advantage would be there, even if the threshold was respected for 12 months before. So I think the case-by-case situation or solution, I should say, that IOC is asking the federations to do is a good start.
I actually agree in this case. The IOC is guilty often of passing the buck a lot, and often they're doing it because they're weak-willed. But I think in this particular case, they are correct to do so for the very reasons that you pointed out. Each sport is different. There are some sports out there which the answer to this might be to eliminate the female category altogether and create open categories because they find
shooting.
Yeah.
When I was talking, I was thinking shooting. Like, shouldn't, I think it actually is together. I don't think it's separate anymore, if I'm not mistaken. But archery, skeet shooting, and even more sports than that, you would think. Example, sports that we think maybe one has an advantage over another, but maybe they don't when you regard more other things. Maybe, like, track cycling to a certain point, yes, you would have more powers in the quad, but sports that are tactical in nature and not necessarily physical, maybe you should open it up and have co-ed sports or team sports. You know, that it has to be rethought, and that's where I agree.
Yeah, and the other thing you've seen, we saw it in the Winter Games with mixed curling, for instance, coming in, that they are looking to try and create more sports in which men and women compete together for this very reason, to avoid this complicated stuff. So this, there's a lot going on here. The other issue that we haven't really addressed yet, and I appreciate that this would represent right now a minuscule amount of athletes, if any at all, but I fear that if this is ever open, wide open, that this would become more widespread. And the reason I believe this, I'm talking about cheating is what I'm talking about. The reason I believe this is because I've seen elite sport. I mean,
yeah,
if you could push the envelope nations well, watch Icarus.
Well, what you're saying is you want to have faith and believe in the good intention of the athletes of the athletes that would be touched by those guidelines. But human nature being human nature and the winning at all cost mentality has shown us in the past that there will be individuals or federations that find ways to take advantage of any possible loophole. And this one, let's not kid ourselves. This one's not going to be any different than any other loophole that they took advantage of before. And that's where it becomes a very touchy subject too, is the question of do you imprison one innocent or have 10 guilty men go free, right? It's that famous question. I think it's going to become a question we need to ask ourselves.
No, precisely. And as you say, I mean, look, if you look at the history of the Olympics, there are suspicions about certain Eastern athletes from way back when, in the early days of the Iron Curtain, perhaps cheating in this very way. I'm not going to name the sport. You can read your own history books and draw your own conclusions, but there have been suspicions of this out there before.
Here, let's narrow the field. Look at throwing sports from the early 80s from East Germany.
Yeah, precisely. But look, again, this is very, very complicated stuff. And the other divide here I want to make clear, I make a very clear divide in my mind when I'm talking about transgendered athletes between elite athletes and recreational athletes. When it comes to recreational athletes, I think it absolutely should just be whatever. If you identify as a female, by all means, play high school volleyball with the female team. I have no problem with this. You were talking about plastic trophies and nothing that's really glory chasing here other than your own fun and your own enjoyment and love of sport. I have no issue with that whatsoever. I mean, that to me is filed under the, you know, unisex bathroom debate in that way. It's just not even something that deserves much more than me confirming that that's my belief. But elite sport is a different thing, because elite sport is something that really is about fine lines. And look, there was a big, you know, the Serena Williams, for instance, there was a whole conversation of, you know, on Twitter or during the US Open of whether, you know, a man thinks, like, just average man could get a single point off Serena Williams.
Oh my God, that's stupid. Yeah, but
the answer to that is yes, because she would make a mistake eventually. But nonetheless, obviously she would beat 99% of the male population. But the difference is that the 1% of the population that she wouldn't necessarily beat are professional tennis players, and they represent probably a couple hundred, which is about where she'd be ranked if she was on the men's tour. That doesn't take anything away from her brilliance, because she was born a female and she has clearly been the greatest female tennis player to ever live. You know, the fact that she is still in the final of a U.S. Open at her age after having a child is incredibly remarkable. And that does not, you know, that's without doubt, right? So when we're talking about recreation and elite, that's the divide I want to be clear about. And I just, again, when I started this conversation by saying, it's complicated, and suggesting it's not complicated is disingenuous.
No, exactly. And in a perfect world, it would be as easy as, yes, we can open it for everyone, for everything. And I truly believe that in utopia, if that's where we were living, and that's where the Olympic movement was from, it would be fine. Everything would be okay. But because there's industries, because there's a lot of money, because there's laws, rules, and commerce surrounding all those sports, there's what we call a level playing field. And that level playing field, yes, inclusion is part of that level playing field. So that's where it becomes a difficult subject, because we don't want to exclude people either. So it is hard to be like, yes, it should be this, it should be that. And I understand why the IOC is sending it back to the individual federation saying, look, if you have a way to find an answer that satisfies both parties for your sport, maybe you know better than we do.
Exactly. And the other thing that I think that this needs to have a resolution. I mean, I'm sure there are some people out there that believe that the resolution should be just, if you were born male, you should compete male. If you were born female, you should compete female. That is one possible outcome of this. And I don't know whether that seems harsh, but it might be an outcome. But we do need clarity, because one thing that I think we need to get away from, and we've seen this at the last Olympics with Caster Semenya, the 800 meter runner from South Africa, that was so strong compared to her competition. She had a lot of accusations about things, and it was unfair and, you know, not really dignified, some of the things that she was required to do. And you want to avoid that as well.
She was mistreated. Like, she was mistreated, and she was outright called things that she's not. And well, that's because people will feel like they're not treated fair, and then they feel like it's fair game to comment or to add their opinion, be like, you know what? So it is a topsy subject, and it's not just Caster Semenya. You just go back to Rio, if you go back to long running distances in the women's side, and I think that's where the threshold of testosterone could be a good idea or something similar to that, because there's natural, sometimes it does happen. There's outliers and there's bodies that are made differently than others, and some women do produce testosterone to a level that is more than natural. So it is a slippery slope, and I do understand the reluctance to the IOC to be the ones to be okay, to be the, that's the threshold here. It's fair up until this, and this is not fair. But if I'm the federal, individual federations now, what should be the guideline? Should this be should we have a resolution before the 2022 Winter Olympics, 2024 Summer Olympics? Will it get there? It's like everyone's passing the hot potato between each other because no one wants to take a decision that will be viewed the opposite way that the intention is there for. But that's where it's complicated.
No one wants to be viewed as like a dinosaur, right? Like they want to be viewed
as a bigot. Yeah, you're right.
To be sensitive, and it's very difficult to have a science-based conversation about it. And it's also, the science is maybe not as definitive as we'd like as well, to how to define what the right way and what the right thing is to use as the marker. I mean, you hit it, the nail on the head there. Like, is testosterone the right thing? There are some women that are just born with higher testosterone levels. Does that mean they should be disqualified? I don't think so.
Let me put it in a different way. When you're somebody that's really tall, Dwayne, your advantage, your physical inner advantage of being tall, you can use it to be basketball and you're applauded for it. If you're a woman athlete for some reason and your body produces testosterone and it's not your fault, you didn't do anything to produce, to entice that production, it just happens naturally, shouldn't you be allowed to take advantage of this in the same way that someone that's 6'5", if it's naturally occurring?
Well, precisely. I mean, I played basketball in high school. I'm 5'6".
You didn't play that long, but you played.
Well, no, I was okay, but at the high school level, I wasn't going any higher because I had the physical disadvantage of being 5'6". And unless even Steve Nash was 6'2", right? So it's like... Yeah.
Steve Nash was small in comparison to everybody else around him. He walks into the room you're standing right now, he's the tallest person in that room.
Yeah, exactly. So no one complains about that. So what is the measure? I don't know. This is... I just don't know. And I think it's okay. And I think in this world that we live in 2019, it has become like somehow wrong to ever admit that you don't know all the answers and that it is a complicated, difficult conversation to have. And I think in this particular case, it would do all of us a lot of good to admit that we simply don't know what the answer is. We want things to be fair from a sporting perspective and dignified and humane from a human perspective. And that is a difficult thing to balance. I do not envy the federations. I do not envy the IOC here to answer this question, but I do think it is an important question to have and an important conversation to have, and one that we will likely have again on this show, hopefully with an expert next time.
Yeah, and I wasn't expecting us to have a solution. And I hope the listeners give us the leeway of not having to commit on any side. It's not about committing on any side. It's not being, yeah, I'm for the guidelines. They should be stricter, and you know, you shouldn't be allowed. Or on the other side, include them all. It's not about that. It's about realizing what it's the nature of the sport itself. And are we looking at the right way? Should have been a gender divide to begin with, a certain sport. And in other sports, cannot live without that. Again, my boxing analogy is a good way to think about it. And then also you have the curling analogy, where it shouldn't matter if you're a woman or a man. It's curling, right? It has nothing to do with any physical advantage between the two sexes normally.
Elite curlers would disagree with you that the men
for the sweeping. Okay, for the sweeping, yes, but there is ways to make mixed teams, right? You know, and if the one team has a, if you like example, if you have a, if it's open, the good sweeper, everyone can have a great sweeper, and it could be man for everyone, but some skippers will be women because they have better strategy than the other ones, and it won't matter, right? And I think, after all this debate, not our debate, because we rarely debate in a way that we're adversarial, because that's not how life works. You got to talk to each other in life. That's how we should deal. And I guess that's what it's all about. If that conversation of every federation looking at themselves in a mirror being, is the nature of our sport truly defined by the gender difference? If so, how do we navigate around, not around, it's not a good way. How do we deal with this situation? And if it isn't, then how do we make it inclusive for everyone? I think that conversation, that inner conversation and conversations on board of directors of federations, hopefully will happen.
Yeah, and look, as my final thought for now, I think that you sort of touched on it a little bit there, that I do anticipate that the future won't necessarily be that we're eliminating men's and women's sports, but I do think that the Olympic movement will need to embrace more mixed sports. I could even see a value and see 20, 25 years down the line where we're seeing mixed team sports in some cases, which might even be interesting to add a third level of competition at an elite level. I mean, think about the world of football. I'm a football guy all of the time, and this is a mental exercise I've done. Like, who would win a World Cup of the mixed soccer World Cup? You have to have, you know, five, what would it be? You'd have five and five, and then the keeper would rotate at half. That would be how you'd do that. So, so that would be an interesting.
That's the most neutral thing I've heard all day.
Yeah, that would be. I think that'd be fascinating. I would love to watch that competition.
Well, yeah.
I think the U.S. would win because the U.S. would have the best women, and the men could compete on an athletic level. That's my guess, but maybe the Dutch. Actually, I'm going to go with the. It's something to think about moving forward. Who wins the mixed World Cup?
It took you a whole of 5 minutes to find how sports that you love the most could benefit from inclusion without necessarily having to separate things. So maybe there's something to that. On that note, I think we did good today.
Yeah, let's hope. And again, before you think about it, yeah, I just want to reiterate. You said we're not trying to take sides. I don't even know if there are sides.
Well, if you are on a side, you're stupid, then shouldn't be a side on either side.
Yeah, it's an ongoing conversation that I think is going to become more and more front and center as trans rights have become very, very much front and center over the past 5, 6 years. This is going to be the next big thing that's the world of sport across the, not just the Olympic movement, but across the world is going to have to deal with. So it's a conversation we're going to have again, Kevin.
And who knows? Maybe if there's a success, maybe maybe co-head soccer becomes the new norm and Manchester City versus Manchester United will become truly, totally different. You never know, right? And that's maybe the future of sports is there. And that's an idea, that's a possibility. And all we ask is that people have a mind open enough, an open mind enough to talk about it and to discuss it. On that note, make sure you follow our Five Rings Podcast account on Twitter at Five Rings Podcast, where we are live weekly and where Dwayne and I give our thoughts on the world of amateur sports, Olympic sports, group sports, events, whatever falls into the umbrella of the Five Rings, which if you haven't figured out by now is whatever we decide fits under that umbrella is what fits under the Five Rings umbrella. Dwayne is at 24th Minute on Twitter. I'm at Kev Laramie. And until next week, as always, on your podium, folks.